Greetings, everyone, and welcome back to the Surprise Jab Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Ruger, surprising you with new topics every single week and jabbing you with your daily dose of UFC. And we have a very special card this weekend, guys. UFC Macau going down in Macau, China. The main card starts at 5 o'clock Eastern, so 4 o'clock for Central Time for me here in Minnesota. The prelims start at 1 in the frickin' morning Central Time. Insane. I'm so excited to be getting up early and watching that card. You know, I might have to go to bed early on a Friday, which I don't know how good that's going to go. Actually, I might just stay up the whole night. I might just not go to bed. I might just pull an all-nighter, just grab some caffeine or something. We'll do that. But anyways, we are going to be dropping our UFC Macau predictions and previewing the entire card. Also, dropping our Week 12 NFL predictions. You know, we are getting better. All right, we are getting better. I'm still yet to win a week in pick'ems. I'm not winning against my family. I'm not winning against my college. I'm not winning against my friends. This is the week. This is the week we predict every matchup correctly. I can feel it in my bones. It's coming. Also, looking at some new UFC fights that have been recently announced and some rumored ones and top 10 new things in pop culture, including they're making a live-action version of one of my favorite movies of all time, How to Train Your Dragon. So, you know, I was actually thinking for a future episode, we could maybe rank my favorite animated movies of all time, something like that. I was gonna do a Game of Thrones related thing for this episode because my buddy's been rewatching Game of Thrones, but I elected not to. But down the line, I think we'll be doing some Game of Thrones rankings on here. But anyways, let's get into it. New UFC news, and this is a big one. The rumored main event, not confirmed yet, but heavily rumored main event for UFC Saudi Arabia going down February 1st is none other than the number 2 ranked middleweight, the former champion Israel Adesanya, and the number 5 ranked Nazardeen Imavov. This is a very fascinating matchup, if you ask me. You know, Adesanya, top dog, was on the peak of the mountain. He was the Mount Everest of middleweights. And then, you know, he loses to Alex Barra, avenges the win there, then loses every round to Sean Strickland, then gets beat pretty badly by Driscus Duplessis. I mean, Driscus Duplessis humbled him in a very big fashion, and now he's coming back against a hard, determined, gritty Nazardeen Imavov. And what we've seen from Nazardeen's past fights, you know, in the Roman Dolidze fight, I saw his striking looking absolutely fantastic. In the Brendan Allen fight, I saw his striking looking absolutely fantastic. And the grappling, we already know, is there. So I think for the Adesanya fight, it's going to come down to, can Adesanya avoid getting taken down? And is he able to actually eat punches? This is a great bounce back fight for Adesanya, but it's also a tough matchup. But also, when I look at who else he could be fighting, I mean, there's Hamzat Chimaev, who would ragdoll him. There's Kyle Barallo, who is kind of on the same level as Nazardeen Imavov. And if it's out of those three, I'd probably go Nazardeen Imavov. So we'll see if that matchup actually gets made, because I hope it does. So that would be absolutely massive. Some confirmed fights that we do know of. A fight has been rebooked between Ricky Tercios and Bernardo Sapage for UFC 311, which is confirmed for the Intuit Dome in California, going down January 18th. This bantamweight matchup, Ricky Tercios, 2-2 in the UFC, of course, was the Ultimate Fighter Season 29 winner, oddly, also won a championship in Fury FC. He's taking on Bernardo Sapage, whose only loss is to Vinicius Oliveira, which that was an insane knockout from Vinicius Oliveira this year. Bernardo Sapage, 11-3. He's from Albania and Sweden. He seems like a pretty gritty guy. You know, he's won championships in multiple promotions. Young, up and coming. He's only 24. I'll be excited to see that matchup. Here's a big one, though. Your main event, I'm assuming, for February 22nd, unless this is, I think this is going to be at the Apex. They don't have a venue yet, but this matchup is confirmed. Middleweight action, the number 9 ranked Brendan Allen takes on the number 13th ranked Anthony Fluffy Hernandez. Anthony Hernandez is on a 6-fight win streak for the ages. Biggest win coming against Michelle Barrera last time out, 13-2 professionally. And Brendan Allen, you know, 24-6, has the most, I think, rear naked chokeholds in middleweight history or something. He had a crazy 7-fight, 8-fight win streak snapped by Nazardeen Imavov last time out. So both these guys are gritty, both these guys are good. And they've actually fought each other before, way back in LFA when they were just young, up-and-coming guys. I'm wondering if this is going to be the main event. Depends where that February 22nd card ends up being. Final confirmed fight. This one, heavyweight action for that Saudi Arabian card, February 1st. Shamil Gaziev, who we're going to mention the rankings in just a second, who is now the number 15th ranked UFC heavyweight, takes on Thomas Peterson. Thomas, of course, is from Minnesota, but he hasn't done much. I mean, he's beaten Muhammad Usman, beaten Richard Foster, Chandler Cole, no one really notable. Shamil Gaziev, his one career loss is to Dresinger Rozenstruik, so not that bad. This is a battle of two heavyweights who just are overweight, who will just never climb the rankings. It's kind of sad to see, but hey, it's a new fight, and we always love looking at new UFC fights. Now, speaking of the rankings, I was about to mention that we did get some updated UFC rankings, and let's kind of go through them, and then we'll get to the big ones. So, first off, women's flyweight division, Tracy Cortez passes Karine Silva after Karine Silva's loss this past weekend. I kind of like it. You know, Tracy Cortez went five rounds with Amanda Ribas, looked better than she has ever looked in her career, despite taking a loss. And as for Karine Silva, you know, she had that fight against Viviana Rujo this past weekend in the bag, and just completely lost it. It was absolutely embarrassing. If I'm Tracy Cortez, I'm looking upwards to potentially another top 10 matchup. As for Karine Silva, she'll be looking down for her next matchup. Heavyweight rankings, Shamil Gaziev, of course, jumps into 15 as everyone just kind of jumps up a spot with Stipe Miocic retiring. They finally removed him from the UFC rankings, which makes absolute sense. Kind of the bottom of the rankings are absolutely screwy, you know. Number 15th ranked Shamil Gaziev, number 14th ranked Mick Parkin, number 13th ranked Walter Cortez Acosta, number 12th ranked Marcos Rogelio de Lima, number 11th ranked Tai Tuivasa, number 10th ranked Derek Lewis, number 9th ranked Jerzy Rozenstruik, and number 8th Marcin Tybura. Those guys would get absolutely dismantled by, let me just read you the top six. Tom Aspinall, Ciryl Gane, Alexander Volkov, Sergey Pavlovich, Chris Blades, Holm Almeida. They would absolutely maul the bottom of heavyweight. So it really takes a lot to be an elite heavyweight nowadays, and you really have to have knockout power, have grappling ability, and I just don't see that with any of those guys. You know, Jerzy Rozenstruik, we know he has knockout power, but he's kind of lost that drive, that grit he had when he was younger. He's not as hungry anymore when he fights. Derek Lewis, legend of the game, knockout artist. Whenever he fights, it's entertaining. I'm always happy to see him fight. Tai Tuivasa, I mean, ever since he beat Derek Lewis, he's done nothing with his career, so he'll be looking for a big bounce back win coming up soon. Marcos Rogelio de Lima, Walter Cortez Acosta, I mean, those guys, just nothing, absolutely nothing from them. But hey, you're in the rankings, you gotta find some positives. UFC lightweight division is the next division with some rankings changes. Paddy Pimblett passes Jalen Turner from 14 to 13, which makes me think Paddy Pimblett is getting a high-profile matchup next time up. You know, I was thinking Jalen Turner and Benoit Saint-Denis would be great matchups for Paddy Pimblett. I saw people proposing a Michael Chandler fight. Whoever Paddy fights next, it will be guaranteed highlights. Rafael Fiziev drops down to 11. He was previously tied at 10 with Renato Moicano. Fiziev, I don't really know when he'll be returning, but I think him versus Matheus Gamrot will be a pretty interesting matchup. Speaking of which, Matheus passes Bilal Dariush from 9 to 8. No news for any of those fighters as the dust settles after Charles Oliveira remains at 2 and Michael Chandler remains at 7. Bantamweight division, Marcus McGee debuts at 14 as Jonathan Martinez is booted from the rankings. Amin Zahabi jumps up to 13. I'm excited to see what Marcus McGee brings to the table. I think Kyler Phillips would be a great matchup. I think Mario Bautista would be a really telling matchup for both those guys to see who can move up into the top 10. And then there's always Rob Font. There's always Song Yeadong. There's always fun matchups right there. But now let's get into the real thing. All right, men's pound for pound. First off, number 15, Charles Oliveira, back in the pound for pound. I love that. I love that. I think Charles Oliveira is a pound for pound giant in the UFC. But the real one, John Jones moves from 3 to 2. Alex Barra drops down from 2 to 3. Islam Makhachev remains the pound for pound best in the world. Now, my belief here is if you're going to have John Jones in the pound for pound rankings, you put him number 1. You put him number 1 because there's no reason that he should pass Pereira but not Makhachev. Now, don't get me wrong. Makhachev, absolutely insane. Okay, the longest win streak in the UFC right now currently, a 14-fight win streak. I mean, of his 26 wins, he's got 17 finishes, multiple title defenses. He's been immaculate. He had a great title defense this year. But Alex Pereira, I mean, 3 title fights this year. All 3 knockouts, main evented 3 of the biggest pay-per-views of the year, and we have him, just John Jones pass him? No. If John Jones was going to pass anyone, it should be both of them, or you just keep John Jones at 3. And don't get me wrong, what John Jones did is spectacular, but you just have to look at it. He beat Stipe Miocic, who hadn't fought in 3 years, who just didn't even look like he wanted to be there. Stipe was just there for the payday. Honestly, that's the only reason Stipe Miocic showed up. It was a payday, and it was probably somewhere in the contract that he had to show up. It's unfortunate. It's tragic. But I mean, it's just weird to see like John Jones is number two pound for pound. No, we either keep him at three and debate politics, or you put him at one and just end the debate. Because Dana White was raging. Dana White was raging. And Dana White loves Makhachev and Pereira, but he really loves John Jones. Now, what's next for all three of those guys? I think we have some great matchups for all three of them. Alex Barra taking on the number one ranked Magomedov Golayev. That is confirmed to be happening next, according to the big bosses in the UFC. I mean, there's no one really. Jiří Procházka, Jamal Hill, Jan Blachowicz, no one. Magomedov Golayev, Alex Barra will be the next matchup at light heavyweight. For Islam, it's the number one ranked Arman Tsarukyan. And that's looking like it's going to be the January UFC 311 main event, which I am super pumped for. But other than that, Charles Oliveira, definitely right there in the mix. And I know people are going to go, oh, Charles, you know, he has one win, coming off of one win. But, you know, he took Armin Tsarukyan to a close split decision. I mean, it was dead even. You know, round one, Charles, round two, Armin. Round three was, it could have gone to either of them. And if we're going to give Armin the title shot, it just makes complete sense that Oliveira takes on the winner. And I would honestly believe Armin and Islam would be very willing to rematch Charles Oliveira. And as we learned, Charles Oliveira had some injuries coming into this last fight with Michael Chandler, which might have explained the more grappling-heavy approach that he took to this one. As for John Jones, I mean, it's Tom Aspinall. It's Tom Aspinall. You're either going to see John Jones retire, which would not surprise me. John Jones would be the fighter to not retire in the octagon, just vacate the title. But, I mean, there's just no way that he's ducking Tom Aspinall. He just has to fight him. He has to fight Tom Aspinall. I mean, when we look at what's left for John Jones' career, okay, first off, he never had to come back. He could have retired, but he chose to come back. He chose to fight Stipe Miocic over the interim champion, and there's just no one else people are demanding him to fight. Like, no one's saying, like, hey, you have to fight Alex Pereira, or we're going to discredit you. You have to fight Magomedov Golayev. You have to fight Jan Blachowicz. You have to fight Volkov, Pavlovich, Blades. No, they are saying, John Jones, there's only one man left for John in his career, and that's Tom Aspinall. Okay, that he's the one last person. And Daniel Cormier brought up an excellent point, is that when John Jones fought Cormier, he was the same age as Aspinall would be fighting John Jones right now. So it's one of those scenarios where Tom Aspinall is looking to be the replacement to John Jones in terms of the GOAT, in terms of one of the greatest. Because when I look at the rest of the heavyweight division, there's no one I see Tom Aspinall losing to. Really, I mean, he's beaten Volkov, he's beaten Pavlovich, he's beaten Blades. I mean, he's beaten three of the top five, and he's in the top five. The only man that would make sense of a matchup is if Ciryl Gane beats Volkov, then we do Ciryl Gane versus Tom Aspinall. And even for that, you know, I've seen Tai Tuivasa drop Gane, okay? And look at what John Jones did. John Jones took him down with ease. We've been seeing the striking from Tom Aspinall. If he takes on a guy like Ciryl Gane, I could easily see him leaning on the grappling and submitting him. So I will be very curious to see what transpires with the rest of the year for the UFC. Not just the year, I mean, but just for the future when it comes to the rankings and stuff. But good fights on the horizon. I'm pumped for it. I'm here for it. Big UFC guy. If you don't know, that's what we primarily talk about here on the Surprise Jab podcast. But that's not all we talk about. What else we talk about is pop culture, new things going on in the movie, TV realm, video game realm, all sorts of stuff. And every single episode, we do the top 10 new things in pop culture, courtesy of Discussing Film. And first off, you know, I was talking about it. This How to Train Your Dragon live action movie, I'm just super pumped for it. I am so excited. Huge fan of those animated movies. My favorite trilogy of all time. That second one hits me so hard. Actually, they all hit me hard. Dude, I can't lie. That is one of the best ones. I think that it's definitely better than, I would say, I think all three of them collectively are better than Toy Story, because I don't think the second Toy Story is that good. I think Kung Fu Panda 1 and 2 are good. I don't think the third one is that good. So this might be the best animated trilogy of all time. And I've been seeing all the pictures of the actors behind the scenes, including you even have Julian Dennison, who was in Deadpool 2, if anyone knows him from that, and actually Godzilla vs. Kong. He's playing Fish Legs in the show, which he actually kind of looks pretty good. You know, obviously, not all the characters are going to look just like they did in the animated show, but they do a pretty good job. So I'm pumped for that. I'm excited. And that's definitely one of the things I would go to the theater and probably see. Number two, first look at a new political thriller series, Zero Day. It follows Robert De Niro as an ex-president who oversees the response to a major attack. Angela Bassett stars as the sitting president, and Dan Stevens stars as a Tucker Carlson-like commentator. very interesting. I'm gonna be honest. I mean, they're just gonna make fun of Tucker Carlson. That's probably some right-wing conspiracy theorist. And they always love to put women as presidents in the fictional world. I always find that very interesting. Robert De Niro, he's an elitist. He's a globalist. I don't really know if I care for Robert anymore. Number three, a new teaser for Alien Earth has revealed that the series is set 2 years before the Alien movie. This Alien universe just continues to expand, and it just continues to unveil a whole bunch of new stuff. It comes to Hulu in the summer. Will I check it out? Maybe, but I've watched all the Alien movies, except for the new one, Romulus, and none of them have really hit me really good. None of them have really been, oh, this is absolutely amazing. So I could probably do without that. Number four, Gabriel Mack will return as Harvey Specter in the new Suits series. He will appear in a 3-episode arc. Never seen Suits. I've heard good things. Maybe I should check it out. But hey, Harvey Specter back in action. Good for him. Number four, are we on? I always lose track. Let's say five. Number five, Stormy Reed says she is not returning for Euphoria season 3. Storm Reed is Zendaya's younger sister in the show. Or what's her name? Oh my gosh, I can't remember any of the characters' names. But she was a big role. She played a big role. So I don't know if we're just going to cut part of Euphoria out. If for Euphoria, they're just going to get a whole new cast of characters. But there have been deaths. There have been people who have stopped doing acting. Zendaya has gotten even bigger than she already was, and she was already big at the time. So I don't really know what they're going to do. I'll be very curious to see. Number six, first look at Dope Thief starring Brian Tyree Henry, Wagner Moura, and Ving Rhames. It follows two men who pose as DEA agents to rob a house, but it turns out they robbed a large narcotics operation. Ridley Scott directed the first episode. It will release on Apple TV March 14th. I am a big fan of all of these actors in this, and Ridley Scott, a great director. Who knows? If I have Apple TV at the moment, I'll give it a shot. Give it a little go for. Number six, Kevin Feige says Avengers Secret Wars will really lead us into a new range of mutants and of the X-Men. He said, again, it's one of those dreams come true. We finally have the X-Men back. Avengers Secret Wars drops May 2027, and Avengers Secret Wars, from what they're gassed up to be, is going to be Avengers Endgame on crack cocaine. They're going to have literally every comic book character ever in a movie, and I'm pumped for it. You know, I don't watch too many of those movies anymore, but they might get me back into it. I might be getting back into a little MCU run if they put out as good a content as I would hope they do. Number seven, Mortal Kombat 2 has been rated R for strong, bloody violence, gore, and language. It comes out in October of next year. Mortal Kombat 1 I never saw, but I've heard it's bloody. I've heard it's gore, and if anyone's played the Mortal Kombat games, you know for a fact that is true. Number eight, Denzel Washington gave some advice to an aspiring actor on how to start in Hollywood. He said, you can't learn to be an actor online. You got to get on the stage, find a little theater. That's where I started. If you want what I got, do what I did. I'll see you at work. Absolutely love that. Denzel Washington helping the younger generation. Denzel just needs to explain what he was doing at the Diddy parties and why he's kissing men on screen. Very, very odd. Number nine, Sebastian Stan says he was offered to take part in Variety's Actors on Actors for The Apprentice, but couldn't as no publicist wanted their client to be paired with him to talk about the film. No one just wants to talk about Trump in Hollywood. How interesting. Why do they all hate Trump? Maybe it's because he knows all of their secrets. And number 10, finally, Gladiator 2 has already earned $100 million internationally. All I've heard is good things about this new Gladiator film. It's really making me interested to check it out. When am I going to? I don't know. I don't really have free time at the moment to go to the theater. I also just don't have a desire to go to the movie theater to go see it. But if I do, I do want to rewatch the first one with, Russell Crowe. Because, I mean, I've heard that is one of the best ever. And when I watched it, I was like little. You know, I don't remember anything about it. But, I mean, I'm all here for it. You know, revenge, the arcs, and they're doing big fights in the Coliseum. They got sharks. They got rhinos. They got killing, violence, all the recipe for disaster, if you ask me. But, yes, those are your top 10 new things in pop culture. There's always interesting things going on. I'm always getting little Twitter updates left, right, and center. But now let's get into our NFL Week 12 predictions. I am ready to finally go perfect on my picks. Kicking off week 12, we have the Pittsburgh Steelers visiting the Cleveland Browns. Who does not love this AFC North matchup? I mean, Browns currently 2-8. They're not doing too hot. Two-game losing streak, one game on the road they've won, one game at home, 1-4 at home and away, respectively. nothing much. 162 points put up. They are one of the worst offenses in the league. Steelers, on the other hand, 4-1, 4-1 home and away, 8-2 record, top of the AFC North, most recently knocked off the Ravens without even scoring a touchdown. Okay, 5-game win streak. And it's these divisional games that'll usually get you, but I've learned when it comes to Thursdays, the safe bet is always the best bet, and I'm going with the favorites, -195, Pittsburgh Steelers. I'm just confident in what I've seen from the Steelers thus far, and crazy enough, these teams play again week 15, I believe it is, December 8th, whenever that week of the NFL season is, so they play pretty soon. There's only one game in between both of their matchups for the year being divisional opponents, so this will be the first taste of what we get. But Jameis Winston, as good as he is, as good as Jerry Jeudy was last week, I mean, Nick Chubb hasn't lived up to expectations. Elijah Moore is a wide receiver 3 at best. David Njoku can only do so much, and this Pittsburgh Steelers defense giving up only 162 points, one of the best defenses in the league. This is an easy prediction for me. I'm going with the Pittsburgh Steelers. And into Sunday, Vikings and Bears open us up, and this should be an obvious prediction for me. Vikings, obviously, I'm a Vikings fan. Vikings currently 8-2, are one of the best teams in the league, second in the NFC North behind the Lions. 3-game win streak for us, and we're also a great defense, only giving up 170 points, 4-1 at home, 4-1 on the road. Very confident in the Vikings this season. As for the Bears, 4-6, bottom of the NFC North, 4-game losing streak. Okay, this Chicago team has not won since October 13th. We're almost in December, goodness sakes. Last win was over the Jaguars. Before that, the Panthers. Before that, the Rams. So honestly, this season they've had, I'd say, one credible win over the Rams. Other than that, some pretty mediocre teams. They've really been struggling, including losing Caleb Williams' first divisional game to the Packers on a blocked field goal. So Bears are not really riding any momentum into this game, and I think this Vikings defense is going to eat them alive. We're going to make it 5 straight losses for the Bears. Give me the Vikings all day. By the way, we're -190 for this, so decently odded. Next one up, Lions, Colts, and I mean, just the state of this Lions team is something I've never seen. 336 points put up, 177 points allowed. This is the best offense in the league. It has been outstanding. Outstanding what this Lions team has been doing. 5-0 on the road, 4-1 at home. I think they make it 6-0. They're on an 8-game win streak. Give me the Lions all day. Little Sam Laporta action, little Amon-Ra St. Brown action. Do it to me, baby. Yes. The divisional matchups just keep rolling in our next one. Patriots visiting the Dolphins. Patriots are +290. Dolphins are -380. Interesting, interesting. Dolphins 4-6 are second in the AFC East. And if they win here, they can keep playoff hopes alive. But looking to play spoiler is the 3-8 New England Patriots. 182 points put up, 248 given up. They're coming off of a loss. The Patriots have gone 2-4 on the road, oddly better than their home record of 1-4. Look, Drake May is super talented, but Tua Tagovailoa is healthy. Devin Achane's healthy. Tyreek Waddle, this is a completely healthy Dolphins team. I would expect nothing more than Dolphins to get back to their ways of winning and knock off the Patriots. And by the way, October 6th, Dolphins beat them on the road. I don't see why they won't win at home. So give me the Dolphins. We're on a 2-game win streak, you know, they're riding a little momentum. Dolphins all day. After that, Buccaneers coming off their bye week. Same with the Giants. Were the Giants on a bye last week? Actually, I can't recall. I know the Buccaneers are coming off a bye. And this Buccaneers team, 4-6, 4-game losing streak. It doesn't make sense. You know, they have a +13 point differential. They've been playing good ball. They just keep losing close games. So similar to the Bears, this team hasn't won since October 13th. Mind you, their opponents, Ravens, Falcons, Chiefs, 49ers, all heavy hitters. All of those games down to, a 10-point, a 14-point, a 3-point, and a 6-point. So very close games, very close games. And I think they get it done here, too. I think the Buccaneers win on the road versus the Giants. Giants just benched Daniel Jones. They don't know what to do. Daniel Jones has been benched. He's not even injured. In will step Tommy DeVito. And Giants 0-5 at home, 5-game losing streak, 2-8 record, one of the worst teams in the entire league. It's pretty awful. Bucks, 2-2 on the road. This will be a telltale sign of if the Buccaneers can compete for the NFC South divisional title or if the Giants will play spoiler. Buccaneers are coming in this one minus 275 favorites. The noon games keep a rolling as the Cowboys visit the Commanders. And I mean, this Cowboys team, five straight, 3-7. They're bad. They're so, so bad. Blown out by the Texans, blown out by the Eagles, lose a close game to the Falcons, lose a close game to the 49ers, blown out by the Lions. Their last win, oddly, was against the Steelers. I don't even know how they beat the Steelers, looking at the state of this team and where the Steelers are at now. But Commanders, two-game losing streak. Mind you, those games have been two top-level teams in the Steelers and the Eagles. So I would not knock them, especially being that they lost by 3-8 in those matchups, respectively. So I think the Commanders do get a win here, do get past the Cowboys. And I think Jaden Daniels continues his great run. He's had 308 points put up. They've been doing good. And by the way, 4-1 at home. This is where they thrive. Now, this is important. Despite the Cowboys' struggles, all of their wins this year have come on the road. So we will see what they produce, but I am going the Commanders over the Cowboys. Chiefs visit the Panthers. Do I even have to give a psyop? The Chiefs are minus 700 favorites. If you don't know what that means, you would have to bet $700 to win $100. Panthers 3-7, 167 points put up, 310 given up. My goodness. They are on a two-game win streak, though. I can't lie. They've gotten some crazy wins out of nowhere. But this Chiefs team, 9-1, they have been spectacular, and I just don't think they're losing to a team in the Panthers. Chiefs all day, that's the smart play. Titans and Texans should be an interesting divisional matchup in the AFC South. Texans coming off a big win, 7-4 now, hold a two-game lead in the AFC South. Titans, 2-8, two-game losing streak, only 170 points put up. I am hoping for a big week from Westbrook Akine, but we will have to see what happens. But I am confidently rolling with the Texans in this one. After a while, I witnessed from Joe Mixon in St. Nico Collins is healthy. Tank Dell is healthy. CJ Stroud has all his weapons to get it done. Getting into our 3 o'clock game, Broncos, Raiders in Las Vegas. This should be interesting. Raiders 2-8, six game losing streak. Does it continue? I don't know. This Broncos team is 6-5 in third place. Okay. Broncos have gone 3-3 on the road. Raiders 1-3 at home. Kind of tough to say. Broncos coming in this one minus 250 favorites. Do I think a Raiders upset is incoming? I can't. I don't know. I truly don't know. You know, these teams, have they played yet this season? They did. Broncos won 34-18 October 6th. Raiders really haven't done anything. Raiders obviously haven't really been playing close. The only good thing about the Raiders is Brock Bowers. Okay, that's the only good thing about this Raiders team. And the more as I look at how they've been playing, I don't know if I can pick this Raiders team. I mean, they have a minus 98 point differential. Yeah, it's probably going to ride with the Broncos in this one. But if we're ever going to see an upset, it would be the Raiders. But we're going to ride Broncos with the smart pick. 49ers visit the Packers in Green Bay. I always love when these two match up. I'm very curious. Very curious to see how this one goes. 49ers 5-5 are bottom of the NFC West. It's just been shocking loss after shocking loss. They do boast a plus 28 point differential though. Pretty shocking. In third place, 7-3 Packers. That's how good the NFC North is this year. They have a plus 37 point differential. They've gone 3-2 at home. They've been playing pretty good, you know. And when it comes to the divisional battle, 49ers, as we already know, lost to the Vikings. They have yet to play the Lions and the Bears, so I will be curious to see how those games go. But when it's on the road in Green Bay, I just feel like the Packers always pull it out. I feel like the Packers always pull out this matchup when they face each other. So we are going with the Packers. And similar to last week, when we pick the Packers in some of these matchups and they lose, it's a win-win because we either predict the game right or I predict or they just lose in general. That's what I'm trying to say. So Packers over the 49ers. I don't know what to do with this 49ers team. They are 5-5, and they're going to need a big push if they even want to make the playoffs. Insane. 3:30 matchups keep it rolling as the Cardinals take on the Seahawks. This is minus 110. Okay, these odds are split. 5-5 Seahawks in third. Cardinals 6-4 in first place. Four-game win streak. Four-game win streak for the Cardinals. It's been pretty good wins over the Jets, Bears, Dolphins, and Chargers. Chargers is a big one right there. And this has been a good Cardinals team. All right, this has been a good Cardinals team. Their only real rough loss came against the Commanders when they were blown out, and the Packers too. So only two rough losses so far to kick off the season. These two have yet to play so far. And this Seahawks team, though, Jaxon Smith-Njigba saucing it up. Kenneth Walker has been looking good. We are in Seattle. All right, Seattle, 3-1 on the road, 2-4 at home, pretty shockingly. Cardinals have gone 2-2 on the road, but I'm picking the Seahawks here. I'm picking the Seahawks, why? Because I have Kenneth Walker and Jaxon Smith-Njigba. It is really that basic. I have no Cardinals players. I have no reason to intrinsically root for the Cardinals. And in these divisional games, especially the NFC West, where the teams are 6-4, 5-5, 5-5, 5-5, it is so dead even. The division is so up for grabs. This is the Seahawks division to win. Getting into our Sunday night football game, the -150 Eagles will visit the +130 Rams. And after last week, I don't think anyone's stopping this Eagles team. 6-game win streak, +80 point differential. They've only given up 179 points. 4-1 at home and on the road. They have played great ball everywhere. Saquon Barkley, Jalen Hurts kind of rotate, going for 30-point fantasy pieces. Devontae Smith, A.J. Brown, Dallas Goedert. They have all the weapons all around. This Eagles team has been looking fantastic. As for the Rams, 5-5, coming off a win here. They have gone 3-2 at home, but these cornerbacks of the Eagles just have been locking up every wide receiver. They only allowed Terry McLaurin one catch. Okay, and Terry McLaurin is putting up better stats than A.J. Brown and Puka Nacua and Cooper Kupp. Now, Puka Nacua and Cooper Kupp, they're both injured. They're both back. They've been healthy. They're going to get fantasy points, but I think overall this Eagles team is collectively better, so I'm going to pick the Eagles to beat the Rams. And with that, we get into our Monday night matchup, and this is definitely going to have some factors in whether I will win in fantasy games or not, as the Ravens visit the Chargers. Ravens coming into this one, and they've had a pretty good season. Pretty good season, some tough losses here and there. 7-4, are second in the AFC North. 334 points put up, 271 given up. You know, it's been offense has been better than defense. Ravens have gone 3-3 on the road. So much better at home than on the road. Chargers, 4-game win streak, 7-3. Only 145 points put up. They've gone 4-1 at home. This one's tricky if you ask me, because I picked the Cowboys last second to beat the Texans to try and win pick-ems last week, and it just didn't play out. And this Ravens team has been stout. They've been good. And as we look at the Ravens' losses so far this season, you know, coming off of one to the Steelers, that Steelers' defense is immaculate. The Browns one, that just didn't make sense. All right? Browns one didn't make sense. Raiders one didn't make sense. The Chiefs one, that made sense. Chiefs one was pretty BS. Their other loss was to, who else did they lose to? Ravens have four losses. No, they've lost to the Steelers. They've lost to the Browns. They've lost to the Raiders and the Chiefs. Okay, that is four now that I've looked at that. But, all right, Ravens, you know, some here, some there. Chargers, you know, how have their wins been on this little 4-game win streak? You've gotten not the Chiefs, you know, when I click on things, you would think they would work. Technology, let me tell you, technology is just not my friend. Oh, I clicked on the Broncos, that's why. But on this little win streak for the Chargers, big knockoff of the Bengals, which was absolutely massive. Titans, Browns, Saints, some lesser teams. As I look at their losses on the year, the Cardinals, the Steelers, the Chiefs, you know, stuff like that. This will be very telling. This will be very telling. I don't know if Harbaugh is going to be able to stop the Ravens, especially Monday night, Lamar Jackson. So I am going to pick the Ravens to win this one. We'll predict a little 27-20 victory for Lamar, getting a little shocking road victory and keeping the momentum going. So those are your NFL Week 12 quick picks. Let me know who you guys are going with as well, as I'm always curious to see who everyone else is picking. But with that, let's get into our UFC Macau predictions. I don't even know if I'm going to be awake to watch these, but I will be covering the results nonetheless. Beginning with the first prelim of the evening, we will be heading to the men's lightweight division. And we are, of course, kicking things off with a Chinese fighter as Mahashat takes on Nicholas Ironmoto. And that's right, Mahashat, singular name. All right, he's a Madonna. He's a Beyonce. He's a prince, okay? He doesn't need two names, all right? He has one name. Mahashat, 10-3. Nicholas Moto, 14-5 with one no contest. 6'5'9" gives Mahashat 3 inches in reach, also has a, or in height, 1 inch in reach, 71-70. orthodox stance for both of these gentlemen. Mahashat coming in this one as the favorite, minus 200. Mota is the underdog at plus 170. Mahashat, 24 years young from China. Of his 10 wins, half by finish, 4 KOs and 1 submission. Of his 3 losses, he's only ever been knocked out once. Mahashat, veteran of the UFC, 2-2. Been with the company since 2021 when he won on Dana White's Contender Series. Debuted with a knockout over Steve Garcia, which has aged tremendously, as since that loss, Steve Garcia has went on to knock out his last 5 opponents and is poised for a fight with Edson Barboza next year. After that, unfortunately lost to Rafa Garcia due to being outgrappled, and Vyacheslav Borshev knocked him out in 2023. But fought earlier this year in April, was able to win a split decision over Gabriel Benitez, and now he finds himself on home soil against another knockout artist in Nicholas Mota. Nicholas Mota, 31 years old, from Nevada. Of his 14 wins, he has 10 KOs. All of his losses have come by finish, which is unfortunate. He's been knocked out in all of those. Actually, I think he's been submitted in one. He was submitted in one, but that was earlier on in his days. So far, you know, he's 2-2 with 1 no contest in the UFC. It's been a pretty abysmal run, if you're asking me. He was actually supposed to fight Ludwig Klein in Paris, but unfortunately pulled out of that fight. Instead, Ludwig Klein fought someone else. I can't even remember who. Did he win that? I can't even recall. But Nicholas Mota, last time he fought was January of this year, where he knocked out in a minute Tom Nolan. So he's coming in with some momentum. What I have seen, though, is that when he takes on guys like Jim Miller, Manuel Torres, he's getting knocked out. When he's taking on guys like Tom Nolan, Cameron Van Camp, younger, unexperienced guys, he's knocking them out. Trey Ogden really showed the grappling inabilities of Nicholas Mota. So I think wherever this fight goes, Mahashat is going to take control of it. And I think on the feet, Mahashat has a great chance to knock out Nicholas Mota. So, of course, we have to kick things off with the Chinese man. Mahashat, I mean, he's fighting in China. You know, we're rooting. We always root for guys when they fight in their home nation. You know, as an American, I guess I'm not supposed to support the Chinese. But, I mean, come on. You know, this kid's 24. He's only 2 years older than me. And he's a professional athlete. And he's fighting in front of his home nation. You know, all of his previous contests have taken place in American soil. So I do kind of hope he gets it done. But now we get into some actual Asian on Asian violence. I hope I don't get canceled for my commentary here, as Zhao Long takes on Quang Bang Li. And let me tell you, I can already tell you who I'm picking, but let me just go on for a second. Zhao Long, 26-9. Quang Li, 8-1. 5'8-5'6 gives Long 2 inches in height. Long also, both men have a 70-inch reach and a orthodox stance. So pretty similar, except for 2 inches in height for Zhao Long. Zhao Long is the favorite, minus 125. Quang Li, plus 165. Zhao Long, the 26-9 veteran, will be making his second UFC appearance. Zhao Long, 26 years old from China. Of those 26 wins, half are by finish, 4 KOs and 9 subs. Of his 9 losses, he's been knocked out 3 times. Originally fought on Dana White's Contender Series in 2021, where he lost the unanimous decision to Christian Quinones, he would go on last season's road to the UFC, where he would pick up 2 decision wins. After debuting in June of this year, he would lose a split decision to Chang Ho Lee, but now he finds himself in China, in front of his hometown, and he takes on the rising Quang Li. Quang Li, 33, despite he has some great genetics. He does not look 33. It looks like he's in his mid-20s. Born in Vietnam, now lives and trains in none other than Minnesota. That's right. That's right. We have a Minnesota boy here. 2 KOs and 3 subs make up his 8 victories. And his only career loss, Chris Gutierrez on short notice in August. That's right. He was supposed to fight on Dana White's Contender Series this fall. Instead, he took a summer matchup with Chris Gutierrez on short notice. Lost that one. But mind you, in that fight, landed 2 takedowns. Got 4 minutes of control time. And he even managed to win, I think it was round 2. I think it was round 2 he managed to win or something. Can't really recall, but the striking inabilities and taking on a tough guy in Chris Gutierrez was the reason he lost that. So Zhao Long, he's got the experience. You know, he's got over 30 professional fights on his record, but we rarely see Minnesota boys in here. And one of my friends is actually Vietnamese, so we have to root for Quang Li in this one. I hope he does get done. I hope he does get done. And, you know, we got to go with the underdogs. We can't pick the favorites in every matchup. Quang Li, I'll be rooting for you. Keeping the action rolling, we head to the men's flyweight division as one of the biggest prospects. Biggest prospects is, you know, kind of a broad term, but one of the better prospects we've seen. Lenor Kavanaugh will be taking on Jose Calcifer. Cal Ziffer Ochoa. Oh my gosh, what a name from Jose. Loner 7-0, Jose 7-0. 5'7" to 5'4" gives Jose 3 inches in height. Both men 67-inch reach. Southpaw stands for that left hand for Jose, orthodox with the right for Loner Kavanaugh. Loner Kavanaugh, the -370 favorite. The underdog, Jose +275. Loner Kavanaugh, 25 years old from England, of his 7 wins, 5 by knockout. Most recently fought on Dan Whitkin Terror Series Episode 1 in August, Season 8, and got a 2-minute, 25-second knockout. Good win for him. Loner Kavanaugh, quite the name, repping England, and now he finds himself in China with a big matchup. His opponent, Jose Ocha, making his UFC debut. Jose Ocha, 23 years old from Peru, of his 7 wins, 6 knockouts. He was actually supposed to fight on the Contender Series August 27th, but unfortunately was not able to. He last fought, oddly, November 3rd. Huh, pretty fascinating. All I've been seeing from the UFC is how good Loner Kavanaugh is. They've been gassing him up on some of their highlight reel tapes, and I actually saw some on Twitter about him. He's the only person I've seen fight footage of, and Jose Ocha, you know, despite being 25 and 23 is younger. He's coming from Peru, you know, we got the Loner coming from England. I think we're going to ride with Loner Kavanaugh for this one, plus a -370 favorite. Those are some big odds. I don't really feel comfortable enough picking Jose, so Loner Kavanaugh is who we ride with. I say we stick with the flyweights here as we get a great matchup here between the, oh my gosh, Art of Knockout is his nickname. I so apologize. This man's name, one of my favorite names I've ever seen, Niamjergal Tumendembarrel. Wow, Niamjergal Art of Knockout Tumendembarrel. Amazing. He takes on Carlos Hernandez, so Carlos Hernandez, not as cool a name. The Art of Knockout, what should I even call him? Tumden or Niam? Niamjergal, 8-0. Carlos, 9-4. Niam, 5'7", 5'8" for Carlos, so Carlos got 1 inch there. 4 inches in reach, though, for Tumendembarrel, 71 inches to 67. Orthodox stance for both of these gentlemen. The Art of Knockout, Niamjergal, coming into this one as the +160 underdog, Carlos Hernandez, -190 favorite. Niamjergal, 26 years old from Mongolia, if you couldn't guess by his splendid name. Of his 8 wins, 7 finishes, 2 KOs, and 5 subs, he was actually supposed to fight Andre Lima June 1st, but that fight never materialized. This guy fought on the road to the UFC last year in May and August, where he picked up a split decision win and a round one submission win, including a 1 minute rear naked chokehold. That's super impressive. Niamjergal, I absolutely love your name. It's going to be tough to pick against you. Carlos, 9-4, 31 years old from Illinois. He is the favorite of his 9 wins. He's gotten 4 submissions. Half of his losses he has been finished in, once by submission and once by knockout. Carlos is currently 2-3 in the UFC. He's picked up decision wins over Victor Altamirano and Dennis Bonder. His losses, round one submission loss to Alan Nascimento, round two TKO loss to Tetsuya Tara, and most recently in June, lost to the undefeated Japanese man, Rei Tatsura. So it's been a hell of a time for Carlos Hernandez, taking on people from Asia. And look, Japan has had his number, Brazil's had his number, and I think Mongolia is definitely going to have his number. Look, I don't know what really is going to happen with these first few fights, okay? It's going to be tough to predict the actual method, but I think Mushahashat can get a finish. I think Kwang Lee's going to decision. I think Lover Kavanaugh's getting a knockout, and I think Niamjergal is getting a submission win, possibly in round number one. He likes to get it done. That's who we're riding with. Niamjergal, however you say his name, he's the Art of Knockout, but I think he's also going to be the Art of Submission. Let's ride with him. Finally, getting into some women's action, our first of 3 women's matchups on the card. Shi Ming takes on Feng Zhao Khan. Whoa, I love their names. Shi Ming, +260. Feng Zhao Khan, -340. Oh my goodness. Shi Ming, 16-5. Feng, 10-2. Ming, 5'2", 5'7" for Feng. So 5 inches for Feng. 66-inch reach advantage to 60 for Zhao Khan. Holy cow, southpaw for Feng, orthodox for Shi Ming. So Feng Zhao Khan, much bigger than Shi Ming. But the experience does go to Shi Ming. Shi Ming, 30 years old from China, currently on a 4-fight winning streak of her 16 wins, 1 knockout, and 6 subs. Out of her 5 losses, she's been finished twice. Fought on the last season of Road to the UFC, Season 3, won in May and August, both by decision. Really showed her grappling, striking in each one as she face grappling, landed a knockdown in that May matchup, and was able to survive 4 takedowns against Dong Huizhang. Gosh, some amazing names over in Asia. Shi Ming, you know, +260, she's kind of a big underdog as she takes on the 22-year-old Fang Zhao Kan from China. 8-fight winning streak of her 10 wins, half by finish, 4 knockouts, 1 sub of her 2 losses. She's been submitted once. Coming off of the road to the UFC as well, a round 1 TKO greeted her in May, and in August she picked up a decision, similar style as Shi Ming, you know, outstriking her opponent, suffering some takedowns, but here she is, ready to do battle, and 22 years old. Look, Fang, we are the same age. You already know I'm picking against you. Plus, she's got the 5-inch height, she's got the 6-inch reach, and I'm riding with her. Okay, Fang Zhao Kan, she's a minus 340 favorite for a reason, but these road to the UFC matchups, you never really know what you're going to get, but I'm excited. Should be entertaining. Give me Fang Zhao Kan. After that, back in the men's flyweight division, as Kiro Sahota takes on Dong Hu Choi. Ooh, Kiro Sahota, 12-2, Dong Hu, 8-0. 5'10 to 5'5. Kiro is a tall flyweight. He's got the height advantage, including an outstanding 7-inch reach advantage over Dong Hun Cho, 73 to 66. Switch stance for Cho, orthodox for Sahota. Ooh. Minus 110. This one is a coin flip. Coin flip. The odds makers could not decide. Kiro Sahota from England, 29 years old, 3-fight winning streak. Out of his 12 wins, he has gotten 6 knockouts and 2 submissions. Of his 2 losses, he was knocked out once. Both of his road to the UFC wins came by decision. Similar stuff here. It appears that strikers have been doing much better on this season of Dana White's Contender Series, as this guy was taken down 9 times in his May matchup against King Shao, managed to get a split decision win, and then outstruck his opponent Raul Penelas 84-38 in his August 23rd unanimous decision win. Kiro Sahota, he's got the height, he's got the size, and he's coming from England. His opponent, Dong Hun Choi, 25 years old from South Korea. Where does record go? UFC stats crashing on me. This always happens. Whenever I go to look at a certain fighter, this always happens. Sometimes it crashes and they don't want me to know. But out of his 8 wins, there we go. He's gotten 3 knockouts. Dong Ho, 8-0, undefeated, and he's a striker. Okay, he's a striker through and through, outstruck his win in May, outstruck his way in August, both by split decision, oddly, so he's been in some tough matchups. Look, Dong Ho, you know, you're 25 from South Korea, I like it. You know, 3 of your 8 wins are by finish, but Kiro Sahota, I just like his name. He's older, more experienced, 8 of his 12 wins by finish. I think we're going to go with Kiro Sahota for this one. I don't know what it is. We're going with Fang Zhao Kan. We're going with Kiro Sahota. They could be a couple. You never, ever know. But, I mean, it's a toss-up, so I'm just going to pick Kiro Sahota. Might as well. And our final Road to the UFC Championship matchup, which I don't really know what you get from winning Road to the UFC. Do you get a UFC fight or something? But we got Bear Gang Giselli against Soo Young Yujitsu Yu. I absolutely love these names. It never gets old. Bear Gang Giselli, 18-5. Soo Young Yu, 13-3 with 2 no contests. 5'9 to 5'6 gives Bear Gang 3 inches in height, and he has 5 inches in reach, 70-65. Orthodox stance for both of these gentlemen. Bear Gang, the +125 underdog. Soo Young Yu, -150 favorite. Gosh, these are tongue twisters saying them all the time. Bear Gang, 28 years old from China, you know, hometown man. 4-fight win streak for the lad, I don't know, gentleman, lad, whatever you want to call him. 14 of his 18 wins by finish, 5 KOs, 9 subs. Of his 5 losses, he's been finished 3 times. Originally fought on Season 2, where he lost a split decision to Tsuyu Kamabuki on a road to the UFC. Came back in May, got a round 2 rear naked chokehold, and then competed in a close matchup in August, beating Tokiyaka Nakashini. Oh my gosh, I love these names. I've said it over and over and over again, but Bear Gang, I mean, what a cool name. B-A-E-R-G-E-N-G. Maybe it's Bear Gang, but I like Bear Gang. Sounds much cooler. His opponent, Soo Young Yu, the favorite, 28 years old from South Korea. 2-fight win streak for him. Of his 13 wins, 8 finishes, 3 KOs, and 5 subs. Of his 3 losses, he's been knocked out once. Both decision wins on his last season of Road to the UFC, including his May win, he only landed 6 significant strikes on 10.5 minutes of control time. So this is a grappler through and through, you know, Bear Gang. He also appears to be a grappler. Looks like you're going to be getting a grappling matchup here. And Soo Young Yu, he seems legit, seems gritty, seems ready. You know, he's coming in 2-fight win streak, 4-fight win streak for Bear Gang. I think the grappling is better with Soo Young Yu. But Bear Gang, you know, if he's not going to be on here, I would hate if I didn't pick him. So we're going to go with Bear Gang. I love his name. He brings the thunder, and he's going to be the final fight before our main card. So I'm excited for it. Prelims going to be showcasing a lot of new talent, but that's a good part. Good part about the prelims. And hey, we got to root for the Chinatown. Okay, we got to root for the Chinatown boys, all right? Hometown boys for the win. Let's get into the main card. First off, light heavyweight action as one of my favorite unranked light heavyweights. This guy's in the come up, and I'm super excited to watch him compete. The minus 320 favorite, Mountain Tiger Zhang Mingyang. He takes on the plus 250 Aussie Diaz. Zhang Mingyang, 17-6. Aussie Diaz, 9-2. 6'4 to 6'2. Aussie has 2 inches in height. He also has 4 inches in reach, 79 to 75. Orthodox stance for both of these gentlemen. Zhang Mingyang, somehow only 26 years old, from China, 10-fight winning streak. He has 11 KOs and 6 submissions, giving him a 100% finish rate. He's incredible. Of his 6 losses, he's been finished 5 times. I mean, insane. He's only ever been to the decision once. 2 fights in the UFC, both round 1 knockouts. Most recently, in February, knocked out Brenson Ribeiro in 1:41. This dude has power. Okay, he has something hidden in those fists. He's got that. What was Deontay Wilder accusing Tyson Fury of, you know, having like some like brick or something, having like metal in his glove? That's what Zhang Mingyang brings. I mean, he's got knockout power, even gotten some submissions. I'm happy to see him back in action. His opponent, Aussie Diaz, 33 years old from California, currently on a 2-fight winning streak of his 9 wins, 7 KOs and 2 subs, a 100% finish rate. Of his 2 losses, he's been knocked out in both of them. So, 2 fighters combined, they've only ever been to the decision once. That is impeccable. Aussie Diaz, you know, not too much on the guy. Fought on season 6 of Damage Contender Series. Joe Pyfer knocked him out since then. Got some independent scene wins. I think this one writes itself. Zhang Mingyang, round 1 knockout. It's written in stone. Give it to me. Feed it to me, honestly. I'm a big Zhang Mingyang fan, and I think he gets the round 1 knockout. Sticking in the light heavyweight division, we're actually going to be getting some ranked opponents as we head to the men's light heavyweight division. The number 8 ranked Volkan Ozdemir will take on the number 10 ranked Carlos Ulberg. I am pumped for this one. Volkan, no time Ozdemir. Carlos Blackjack Ulberg. Volkan is 20-7. Carlos is 11-1. 6'4 to 6'2 give Carlos 2 inches in height. He also has 2 inches in reach, 77 to 75. Orthodox stance for both of these gentlemen. Volkan coming in this one as the plus 200 underdog. Despite being very inexperienced, Carlos Ulberg minus 245. But once we get into his stats, you'll understand he is not that inexperienced at all. Volkan Ozdemir, 35 years old from Switzerland. Of his 20 wins, 15 finishes, 13 KOs, and 2 subs. Of his 7 losses, he's been finished 4 times. He is freaking veteran. Okay, Volkan Ozdemir, been with the UFC for close to 7 years, debuted in 2017, beat Ovin St. Preux, beat Misha Serkinov, beat Jiwi Manua, both in quick fashion, and wound up getting a title shot against Daniel Cormier, who would maul him to a round 2 TKO loss. After that, losses to Anthony Smith, Dominic Reyes, would beat Ia Latife, Alexander Rakic, then brutally knocked out by Jiri Prochazka. Decision loss to Magomed Ankalaev, beat Paul Craig, lost to Nikita Krylov, but as of late, submitted Bogdan Guskov in round 1, and most recently in June, knocked out Johnny Walker in a performance in the night knockout in round 1, too. Phenomenal stuff. Volkan kind of having a little career resurgence, 3-1 in his last 4, including 1-0 in 2024. So Volkan, you know, been a rough road for him, suffered some losses here and there, but looking to get back into it with a 3-fight win streak and potentially jumping into a top 5 matchup with a win here, but it will be no easy fighting as he takes on the Black Jag, Carlos Ulberg, 34 years old, from New Zealand. Of his 11 wins, 8 finishes, 7 KOs, and 1 submission. He was actually supposed to fight Jamal Hill. Then he was supposed to fight Anthony Smith at UFC 303. And then he got that canceled. And by the way, he was also supposed to fight Alonzo Menifield earlier in the year. And he was supposed to fight Dominic Reyes twice. So this guy's had 5 canceled fights this year. It's been absolutely insane. But Carlos Ulberg was able to get a fight in May against Alonzo Menifield, who he knocked out in 12 seconds. 12 freaking seconds. Insane. Carlos currently is on a 6-fight win streak with 5 straight finishes, including 4 in round number 1. Incredible stuff. His only loss of fight of the night to Kendi and Chukani, which was a crazy 2-round fight. Other than that, this dude has been phenomenal. I don't think it stops here. Volkan, I love you, but Carlos Ulberg. Carlos Ulberg all day. It might go in round 2, might go in round 3, but I'm going to go round 1 knockout. I mean, it's the safest bet. We've seen it over and over. Round 1 knockout against Tafon and Chuki. Round 1 knockout against Nicolai Nogamorano. Round 1 knockout, Io Pitura. Most recently, 12-second knockout. That's just unheard of nowadays, and he's getting it done. So, Carlos Ulberg, round 1 knockout, inject it into my system. Following our light heavyweight giants doing battle, we will drop down to the women's flyweight division, where the biggest favorite and underdog on the card are in this matchup, as the minus 950 Wang the Joker Kong takes on the plus 550 Gabriela Gabby Fernandez. Wang Kong 6-0, Gabriela 9-3, both women are 5'6". Both women have a 66-inch reach, and both women fight in the southpaw. I mean, these two are eerily similar, yet those, what do you want to call it? The odds are just completely two tales of a different story. Wang Kong, 32 years old, from China. Of her 6 wins, 4 finishes, 2 knockouts, and 2 subs, all in round 1. I mean, debuted this year in May on the road to the UFC, round 1 guillotine choke. Fought in August against Victoria Leonardo, minute knockout. I mean, she is coming in with some insane pressure. And she was at the weigh-ins or with the face-offs or whatever in full Joker face paint. Yes, Wang Kong, bring me the win. Wang Kong, too, a phenomenal name. Her opponent, the plus 550, Gabriela Fernandez, coming in this one, 31 years old, from Brazil. Of her 9 wins, she's gotten 5 finishes, 2 by KO and 3 subs. And she's never been finished, you know? Debuted in 2023 to a decision loss. Lost again in 2023 in a decision loss, but picked up a fight of the night win in June against Carly Judice. What a fight of the night woman's fight? 3 rounds on a random pay-per-view? Or not pay-per-view, random fight night Apex? How weird. When I see odds like that, I know never to pick against it. Wang Kong, round 1 finish. There's just, I mean, we'll say knockout. We'll say knockout, I mean. Honestly, Wang Kong is coming into this one with some serious momentum. She's fighting in China. And look, we couldn't get Zhang Wei Li on this card, so you get Wang Kong instead. So she's bringing the thunder. After that welterweight matchup, Song the Assassin Kinong takes on Muslim King of Kung Fu Salikov. Song Kinong 22-8, Muslim Salikov 20-5, 6'5'11". Song takes the advantage there, and a 71-70-inch reach advantage for Song. Orthodox stance for both of these gentlemen. Song Kinong, the hometown man from China, +155. The Russian Muslim Salikov -185. Song Kinong is 34 years old, and out of his 22 wins, has 18 finishes, 9 KOs and 9 subs. Half of his losses, though, he has been knocked out in 4 of his 8. Song last fought in August, where he picked up a decision win over Ricky Glenn. Been with the UFC since 2017. Never really amounted to much. At one point was 4-1 before he got knocked out by Max Griffin. He also almost knocked out Ian Garry in round 1 before getting knocked out in round 3. 2-1 in his last 3, so not too bad. Fighting in China, you know, I got to root for Song here. And, I, you know, despite going to the decision his last 3 fights, I mean, dude, 18 of 22 wins by finish, very impressive. He'll be taking on the 40-year-old from Russia, as we mentioned, Muslim Salikov. Of his 20 wins, 15 finishes, 12 knockouts, and 3 subs. Of his 5 losses, he's been knocked out 4 times. Most recently, picked up a split decision win over Santiago Ponzinibbio in July. Before that, got knocked out by Randy Brown in 3 minutes. So, Muslim coming in this one with a win. Been in the UFC since 2017. Very similar run. At one point, was actually on a 5-fight win streak before Li Jingliang knocked him out in 2022. Picked that, followed that up with a big round 3 knockout of Andre Fialo, but lost to Dalby, lost to Brown. Both of these men coming in with a win, and it's a toss-up 50-50. Muslim is 40. Song, 34 in China. You know, I got right with Song. It's a plus 155 underdog. These are the underdogs you like to see. Okay, some underdog money right there. This is where you thrive. This is where you pick. And honestly, round 1 knockout. Might as well, you know. I think he's going to bring that Randy Brown type of pace, not that Santiago type of pace to the fight. You know, Santiago Ponzinibbio is very, very conservative in that matchup, very counter-striking, and it played against him. Meanwhile, Randy Brown went right at him, strike him, caught him on the chin, and that was that. I think Song Kinong is going to bring that pressure and get a round 1 knockout. With that, we get into some top three action here, which I guess there's only one fighter in the top three. Women's strawweight division, as the number two ranked Yan Chionin takes on the number 10 ranked Tabitha Baby Shark Richie. Former title challenger Yan Chionin back in action. Yan Chionin coming in this one 18-4 with one no contest. Tabitha 11-2. 5'5 to 5'1 gives Yan 4 inches in height. She also has 2 inches in reach, 64 to 61, or 63 to 61. Orthodox stance for both of these ladies. Number 2 ranked, Yan Chionin, 35 years old from China, but now trains in California. Of her 18 wins, half by finish, 8 KOs and 1 sub. Of her 4 losses, she's been knocked out twice. Yan Chionin, been with the UFC since 2017. Only losses to Carla Esparza, Marina Rodriguez, and most recently, Zhang Weili, which has been her only fight of this year. But despite getting pretty much losing every single round in that fight, she didn't look too bad. You know, landed some takedowns of her own. The striking looked crisp. I liked what I saw from Yan Chionin. Last win was in May of 2023, where she got a round one knockout of Jessica Andrade. You know, Yan Chionin, she's experienced, she's game, and she's fighting in front of her hometown in China. Gotta ride with her in this one. But Tabitha Richie, let's talk about her. 39 years old from Brazil, also lives and trains in California now. Of her 11 wins, 4 finishes, 1 KO, 3 subs. Of her 2 losses, she's been knocked out once. Currently coming in on a 2-fight winning streak, 2-0 on the year. Win over Tisha Pennington, most recently a win over Angela Hill. You know, nothing spectacular. It's been a pretty mediocre career for Tabitha Richie, but look okay. Yan Chionin, hometown girl, fighting in China. I gotta ride with her. You know, -195 favorite. It's pretty simple. It's pretty simple for me. And you know, as I look at who they've been fighting, you know, freaking Yan Chionin has taken on title challengers or former champions in her last 5 fights. Tabitha Richie, I guess, fought Angela Hill, which is a good win, but other than that, nothing too much. I'm pretty content with a Yan Chionin decision win right here. But with that, we get into the main event of the evening, and it's a great main event. Oh my gosh, China, you're being treated to a banger as the number 3 ranked man to weight, Piotr No Mercy Yan, takes on Devison God of War Figueiredo, or Deus de Guerra, if you want to say it in Brazilian, I believe it is. Whatever he speaks. Portuguese? I don't know what it is, but it's a cool language. Piotr Yan, 17-5. Devison, 24-3 with one draw. 5'5 to 5'7 gives Piotr 2 inches in height. Devison, though, has the reach, 68-67. Switch stance for Yan, orthodox with a right hand. Powerful hand from Devison Figueiredo. Piotr Yan, -320 favorite. Odds are high in his favor. +250 underdog for Devison Figueiredo. Oddly enough, Piotr Yan is closer to home soil, so this is almost a hometown matchup for him. Piotr Yan, 31 years old from Russia. Of his 17 wins, he's gotten 8 finishes, 7 knockouts, and 1 sub. Of his 5 losses, he's never been finished. I do want to add, you know, coming in the UFC, this guy was on an incredible run. Okay, he was 15. He was 15-1 heading into his first title fight, where he lost to Aljamain Sterling by disqualification. Okay, next loss, split decision. No one thought he really won against Aljamain Sterling. Split decision where he actually like won on everyone's scorecard against Sean O'Malley, and then he got humbled in the grappling department by Merab Dvoevashvili. So the last 3 guys to beat him. So of his 4 losses, 3 guys have beaten him. They've all been champion. The last 3 champions at bantamweight. So Piotr Yan, let's not hold that against him. Look, he won in March in his return matchup against Song Yadong. Looked phenomenal in that. Busted Song wide open. By the way, why is Song Yadong not on this card? We literally have a top Chinese fighter in the UFC, and he's not on this card. That's ridiculous. But Piotr Yan, been with the UFC since 2018. This guy truly is no mercy. And, you know, the finishes haven't really come as of late. You know, there's at one point he was getting finishes over Uriah Faber or Jose Aldo, but he's kind of become a decision fighter since then. He's experienced. He's witty. He brings it. And if he wins this, you know, we could be talking title shot for his next matchup. It won't be easy, though, as he takes on Devison God of War Figueiredo, former flyweight champion, 36 years old from Brazil. Of his 24 wins, 18 finishes, 9 knockouts, 9 subs. Of his 3 losses, he's been finished twice. Now, mind you, those 2 losses are both to Brandon Moreno. So, this guy, incredible. His run at flyweight was impeccable. Multiple finishing wins, titled fights, incredible. But this is a new era of Devison Figueiredo. Since December of 2023, he has been in the men's bantamweight division. Since then, 3-0, including two wins in 2024, round two submission of Cody Garbrandt, and he became the first man to knock down Marlon Vera in his August win. Devinson Figueiredo, the number five guy, poised for a big shot here, and I mean, the winner is going to be ranked number three, arguably, undisputably, the number three guy, and I'm very curious to see what both men bring to the table, because Devinson Figueiredo, I've seen grappling in all of his fights. I expect to see some grappling here. Peter Yan has really great anti-grappling. I mean, Song Yadong went 1 of 8 on takedowns. Needless to say, Mirab Duavishelli going 11 for 49 is insane. He defended 38 takedowns, landed 6 against Sean O'Malley, so we know that he has the ability to land takedowns of his own. Quite honestly, outstrikes every single person he fights usually. Peter Yan, super talented. Devinson Figueiredo, also talented. I'm expecting a decision, split decision win here for Peter Yan. You know, Peter Yan, I don't even think that Devinson Figueiredo is less of ability. I just think what the circumstances we're going to be under, Devinson might be feeling more momentum since there's a crowd. Peter's going to be able to play to that, maybe drop round one or two, but come back in rounds 3 to 5 and pick up the decision win. So Peter Yan by decision is my prediction. And, you know, I hate to pick decisions, but Yan Cheon and Peter Yan, they just give me decision vibes. They honestly do. But this China card should be absolutely phenomenal. I'm excited for it. I'm here for it. It's going to be a good time. But that's all, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you so much for listening. I want you all to know that I'm actually recording this Thursday night. You know, I was too sick to finish it Wednesday. I started recording it. And today I worked from 1 to right about 9 o'clock on a group project. It was effing insane. I am never doing that again. That was excruciating. But you know what? It wasn't too bad of a time. So that's all I got for today's episode. We've got good ones coming up on the horizon. Multiple guest episodes next week. I'll catch you all next time on the Surprise Jab Podcast.